Hello, Katie Winkler here. Time for another episode of Campus, a novel that wants to be a musical. This week, I have two musical numbers to present to you, not in the way that I really wanted to present them. Due to the pandemic, I have not been able to make new recordings of the songs, so I had to use an old recording for one of the songs, and the quality is not very good. But you do get to hear, for the first time, my composer, Curtis McCarley's voice, which is wonderful, and you get to hear him playing. It's just not a very high-quality recording, and I regret that. The other song, written by Curtis, I'm going to be singing, called Fightin' Fundies, and it's supposed to be much different than what you're going to hear it. But in the end, I kind of think it's kind of funny, and that's the main point of this whole thing, is to be funny. So I hope you'll come along and join us for this episode. I think you're going to like it, even though some of the production is not up to what I would have wished for under other circumstances. But you understand. So here we go. Chapter 3. Dr. Dagg was having some fun. After that hideous number, he called for a break and had a little chat with that cute little elf who was eyeing him. He left her. She begged him to stay, he would want you to know, and went back to the stage, smiling and speaking into it. But once again, there was no sound. Jim had left, and the audio engineer now on duty, Gudget Boogerman Palmer, was surveying the soundboard and contemplating what exactly that one lever on the far right was for. By the way, in Gudget's defense, he inherited his nickname. And in addition, Booger hasn't always meant what it means now. Robert Turkey George Palmer, one of Gudget's ancestors, had killed 105 bear in his lifetime, mostly without the help of any hound dogs. Seems like he should have been called Bear George, doesn't it? But Turkey George is more lyrical. Turkey George was the best hunter anywhere around, and his nickname, I guess his alternate nickname, was Boogerman. He had told his teacher to her face that he wanted to be a Boogerman, also known as a bogeyman, a haint, a specter. He wanted to come back and haunt the old battle axe of a teacher. Just like he, Gudget Palmer, would come back and haunt all of his so-called teachers, and that Dr. Dagg, of course, that pompous ass that he was supposed to be running sound for. Sitting there staring at that soundboard, he thought he could hear Dr. Dagg's voice in his head. "Turn on the sound, you nincompoop!" Gudget was startled from his reverie. Oh, shoot. It's the pompous ass for real. He flipped some switches, and after only one or two ear-splitting bouts of feedback, Dr. Dagg was alive once more. Yet! Dag nabbit! Dr. Dagg looked out over the crowd that had gathered for the main entertainment. Being the consummate professional that he was, he wasn't going to let a few tech issues get in his way. Ah, ha ha! All right, you rowdies, let's have some fun. Starting it all off with our very own... Dr. Dagg glanced down at Mrs. Sabowski, stationed once again below the stage, holding up a large poster board with the name of the group written in large letters. He smiled. What would he do without Mrs. Sabowski? Our very own Fightin' Fundies, inviting you to join Fellowship of Understanding, the need for diverse and integrated, almost evangelical, but not quite because that's just so yesterday, athletes, and everybody else who wants to join because we need the money, formerly known as the Fellowship of They Who Shall Not Be Named because it isn't politically correct, athletes. You know, I always wanted to have a football team here, and this is the closest I can get. But I will someday, by God, by a divine heavenly being, if you believe that kind of thing. I don't see why, just because we're a community college, we can't benefit from the big money that... Miss Sabowski was again doing that strange whisper yelling that he was starting to dread.
Dag!
Thankfully, it only took one whisper yell to pull Dr. Dag up short. Oh, okay. Enough about that. He raised his hand and gestured towards the edge of the stage, where a group of a dozen men and women stood milling around and anxiously chatting away at one another. Give it up for the Fightin' Fundies! The Fundies were an eclectic bunch of Christmassians. Gnomes, trolls, dwarfs, demon dogs, and hellhounds. Without teeth, of course. Fairies, elves, even a wood booger or two. All dressed in bright red uniforms with gold epaulettes, shakos atop their heads with a Fighting Fundies crest. A black field with a gold rampant regardant lion standing over an azure lodged deer separated by a murrey blazon with three argent bezants. And underneath it all, the motto, Class Aptent, Fas Omni Est Mecum, which loosely translated means Christmas is just all right with me. I guess I need to explain Christmassians to you now, don't I? Christmassians are not really tied to the more ancient part of the religion they spun off from. All that love thy neighbor as thyself stuff doesn't lend itself to their more pragmatic and profitable mindset. In the early days of Dog Hobble, a group of elves with German ancestry brought their Christmas tradition south as they immigrated from Pennsylvania in the early 18th century. Yule logs, Christmas trees, and of course, beloved Christmas carols like O Tannenbaum. When the toy factory was built, the elves who founded it knew Christmas was the answer to all of Blue Ridge County's woes, providing lucrative products that could be shipped around the world, jee-haw whimmy diddles and flipperdingers galore to fill all of the kiddie stockings. Many jobs, jobs, jobs for the taking, with 10-hour workdays to fill those vacation hours and make a little extra money to spend on Christmas dinner, which every worker was able to spend with his family the whole day, as long as they all were at their post all the earlier the next day. Idle hands are the devil's playground, you know. No Boxing Day needed for hardy Dog Hobble folk. So the Christmassians and the toy factory went hand in hand because people needed money and toys at Christmas, and the toy factory provided both. Anyway, that's not either here nor there. Back to the stage. The Fighting Fundies were Christmassians through and through. Devoted to Christmas, the toy factory, and their country, they came on the stage carrying snares, toms, bass, and cymbals. Wordlessly, they formed a drum line, clicking their sticks against the drum rims like bands do when marching onto the field. The crowd stood silent in anticipation of the grand event. On the hill overlooking the spectacle, Jack Spratt and his mother Cindy Spratt stood in awe. They were both evangelical Christmassians, and so they were awed over such overt displays of orthodoxy in this post-Christmassian era. Did you know that some people don't even put lights up anymore? And some, if they do, only put those little white lights up, or horrors, just blue. But here were the Fightin' Fundies, singing at the club rush advising registration day. Since this was Jack's first day of school, and he was the oldest of 10, all homeschooled, his mother saw the Fightin' Fundies as kind of a sign from heaven. She grabbed her son's hand. Jack squeezed his mother's hand. He knew this was hard for her, but she was going to have to let him go. And he was fairly convinced that it was time for her to let him go. She had not been too happy when he said he wanted to quit his job at the toy factory and pursue higher education at the campus. He was an elf, and making toys had been the Christmassian tradition in their home for generations. They kept their Christmas lights and the creche up all year round, too, like decent folk. But Jack knew that if he was going to make it in the wider world outside of Dog Hobble, then he would need a practical, common-sense, technical education. No frills. Just the training he would need to get a job as an accountant and really move up in the world, or at least at the factory. He was glad, then, that this Fightin' Fundies band was the first thing his mother would hear as they walked onto the campus and up to the banks of the computers where he, Jack Spratt, would register for classes. The clack of the wooden sticks against the rim of the drums suddenly came to a stop, and the drumming began. There was a series of drum runs as the Fundies got into position, and then came the crash of the cymbals as the band began to sing. Don't get annoyed. You know good and well that if this were a musical, which this novel really wants to be, then it would be about time for a number. For right is might, the thong is wrong, choose the narrow way. Just say no, thumb your nose, I could never sink that low. Sing together, just us pros, and sing our fightin' Funday pros. We're the fightin' Fundies, we go to church on Sundays. We never curse, don't smoke or drink, and try our best not to think. Just sing along, but not too gay, we'll tell you what to say. Smile real big, that can't be wrong, and sing our fightin' Fundy song. I know what's right, I know what's wrong, my memorization skills are strong, I know how to follow along, I learned the Fightin' Funday song. Oh, we're the Fightin' Fundies, we go to church on Sundays, we never curse, don't smoke or drink, and try our best not to think, and we always wear clean undies, 'cause we're the Fightin' Fundies. Yeah. Cindy turned to her son, her oldest son, the one who had helped her hold things together when her Jake died, the one she had to let go into this scary alien world with its vampires and zombies. Well, wasn't that nice? You should introduce yourself to those boys. Jack loved her but wanted her to just leave. Was that cold and cruel? Why did she have to need him so much? Maybe I'll have some classes with them. That would be nice. Cindy just stood there holding both of her son's strong hands. This was awkward. Jack looked around but saw that they were a good way away from the crowd. I guess this is it. She didn't let go. I just have to get registered. She didn't let go. Shouldn't take too long. She didn't let go, so Jack pulled his hands from hers, patted her on the shoulder, and turned to go. He heard her sniffling, stopped, and closed his eyes in dread. He turned to her. I'll see you at home for lunch. Cindy straightened herself up and ran her fingers under her eyes. She knew she should have brought tissue. All right, I'll have tomato sandwiches, your favorite. Sounds good. Heavy on the pepper, light on the mayo. Great. And those Granny Smiths you bought at the farmer's market are perfect for a pie. A pie? An apple pie. I'll be back home for lunch. Terrific, Mom. Guess I better go now. He turned to go, looking out over all of the students milling around the quad. Would he fit in? Would he be the shining star that he was at home, where his mother was his teacher and his siblings his classmates? They had other homeschool groups they met with, and in one of those groups was Patty, pretty Patty, an elven maiden with beautiful straight blonde hair and piercing blue eyes, just like him. They had chemistry together. Yes, they did. And she had shared with him some of the secret potions of her history. He could have stayed safe with her, maybe. Isolated and happy. His mother was looking at him curiously. Are you sure you don't want me to go with you, son?
I'm sure, Mom. Don't worry, I'll be fine.
But you might have questions about your classes.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who can answer my questions. And you know, you're only a cell phone away.
But when you were homeschooled, I took care of everything.
I know, Mom, but that was then. And now, well, I'm not a little boy anymore. I haven't been since Dad died.
Oh, son, I know. You've helped so much being big brother to your siblings. But I still see the little boy who used to sit perched up at the breakfast nook learning how to read. I've been your teacher all these years, and I worry.
I know, Mom.
I worry you'll forget where you came from.
Mom.
I mean, it's a hard, cruel, liberal world out there. But I just don't know if you're strong enough to withstand the wiles of the devil.
Of course I am.
You'll stay true to Christmas and country?
Of course I will.
I'm an all-American boy. Every mother's dream come true. Keep my head trim and always shine my shoes. Mow the lawn on the weekends. Don't have time for girlfriends. What son could offer more than this all-American boy? American boy.
He loves his mama.
American boy.
His country too.
American boy.
Now he bleeds red, white, and blue. Does his best to do what's right in more ways than one.
You know this boy's homespun. All American boy. An all American boy. Every teacher's dream come true. Always respectable, always exceptional too. It's not just about the good looks, cause I know how to hit the books. You just can't ask for more than this all-American boy. American boy
learns his lesson.
American boy
questions.
American boy, he's such a joy. This all-American boy. This all-American. All-American boy.
Inextricably, from the bushes, a group of evangel girls, Chrismassians with long, straight hair, modestly dressed in skirts just above the knee, Bobby socks, and Mary Janes, popped out of the bushes all around the mother and son, singing the chorus loud and clear.
Mm-hmm.
While the girls were singing, not too out of tune, Jack was dancing up a storm, jumping up and down, doing high kicks. Then he started in dancing again, and the Evangel girls sang. Getting a little out of breath, but not daunted, Jack leaned over and rested his hands on his knees, took a few gulps of air, looked at the prettiest of the Evangel girls, took her by the hand, smiled, danced, and sang. Then he danced with the Evangel girl, whose name was Lucy, who had never been noticed by a boy, man before, even though she was pretty in a conservative Christmassy kind of way. And she will probably not ever be mentioned in this novel ever again, but she should be mentioned because even nondescript Christmassian girls have a right to be noticed and have a life, don't you think? And have a place in my novel that wants to be a musical. Hey, let's give her some lines in the chorus. Now, before his mother could stop him again, Jack kissed her cheek, waved goodbye, and ran down the hill to the quad, walking right up to Mrs. McBride's table. Campus, a novel that wants to be a musical, is by Katie Winkler. The songs Fighting Fundies and All American Boy are composed by Curtis McCarley. Fighting Fundies is performed by Katie Winkler. All American Boy is performed by Curtis McCarley and Katie Winkler. Appalachian Coal Mines is written and performed by Mid-Air Machine, courtesy of Free Music Archive. The sound effects are provided by freesound.org. Many thanks to Anchor, making podcasts easy. Angela Cantola and Don Wallace. John Winkler, my dear husband, and Hannah Winkler, my incredible daughter, who, Lord willing and the creek don't rise, will be singing a Gaelic folk song next week. Hope you'll come back and have another listen. Bye now.